welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward. We have a real treat for you this week, as we use Halloween as an excuse to bring you the very best horror and mystery programs from radio's golden age. This week, we have a medley from the most famous master of dramatic horror, Orson Welles. The first half hour is from Mercury Summer Theater, and the second is from a series he broadcast from London called The Black Museum. The radio play is by Louise Fletcher, who was famous for another chiller, the play Sorry, Wrong Number. Orson Welles became internationally famous when he broadcast War of the Worlds, causing a panic among people who thought that aliens had invaded New Jersey. They thought it was a news broadcast rather than science fiction. Our first selection, The Hitchhiker, is Orson Welles' spookiest story, and that is saying a lot with his track record of scaring people. Enjoy Mercury Summer Theater, The Hitchhiker, starring Orson Welles, first broadcast June 21st, 1946, on CBS.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles, your producer of a special series of broadcasts presented by the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon, the Mercury Summer Theater of the Air. Ladies and gentlemen, the element of suspense is so vital to our story tonight that our sponsors, the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, are omitting their usual commercial message during the intermission between the acts so that our play will go uninterrupted from spooky start to spooky finish. Therefore, let's give Ken Roberts his 45-second opportunity right now to extol the merits of that blended, splendid... Ken?
Of that blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon. Those two words tell the whole flavor story. You see, every single drop of Pabst Blue Ribbon is the happy result of blending, the full flavor blending of never less than 33 fine brews. That's right. Never less than 33 fine brews blend their individual taste tones to give you that splendid flavor. Not too light, not too heavy, but fresh, clean, sparkling, with the real beer taste coming through just the way you like it. Friends, these days, when your dealer is occasionally unable to supply you with all the Pabst Blue Ribbon you'd like, please keep on asking. For every single bottle you do get will live up to the same high standards of quality and taste. Yes, every bottle will be, as always, blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon. And now, Mr. Welles.
We of the Mercury reckon that a story doesn't have to appeal to the heart, it can also appeal to the spine. Sometimes you want your heart to be warm, sometimes you want your spine to tingle. Well, the tingling, it's to be hoped, will be quite audible as you listen tonight to a classic among radio thrillers. Its author is one of the most gifted of all the writers who've ever worked for this medium, Lucille Fletcher, who wrote the greatest single radio script ever written, Sorry, Wrong Number. The title of this, her terrifying little tale of Gru for this evening, is another spine tingler by name, The Hitchhiker. I am in an auto camp on Route 66, just west of Gallup, New Mexico. If I tell it, maybe it'll help me. It'll keep me from going crazy. But I must tell this quickly. I'm not crazy now. I feel perfectly well. Perfectly well. Except that I'm running a slight temperature. My name is Ronald Adams. I'm 36 years of age, unmarried, tall, dark, with a black mustache. I drive a 1940 Ford V8, license number 6V7989. I was born in Brooklyn. All this I know. I know that I'm at this moment perfectly sane. That it is not me who's gone mad, but something else. Something utterly beyond my control. But I must speak quickly. At any moment, the link with life may break. This may be the last thing I ever tell on Earth. The last night I ever see the stars. Six days ago, I left Brooklyn to drive to California.
Goodbye, son. Good luck to you, my boy.
Goodbye, Mother. Here, give me a kiss, and then I'll go.
I'll come out with you to the car.
It's raining. Stay here at the door.
Oh.
Hey, what's this, tears?
Oh, it's just the trip, Ronald. I wish you weren't driving.
Oh, Mother, there you go again. People do it every day.
I know, but you'll be careful, won't you? Promise me you'll be extra careful. Don't fall asleep or drive fast or pick up any strangers on the road.
Strangers? Don't you worry. There isn't anything going to happen. It's just 8 days of perfectly simple driving on smooth, decent, civilized roads with a hot dog or a hamburger stand every 10 miles. I was in excellent spirits. Drive ahead. Even the loneliness seemed like a lark. But I reckoned without him. Crossing Brooklyn Bridge that morning in the rain, I saw a man leaning against the cables. He seemed to be waiting for a lift. There were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. He was carrying a cheap overnight bag in one hand. He was thin, nondescript, with a cap pulled down over his eyes. He stepped off the walk, and if I hadn't swerved, I'd have hit him. I almost did. Almost did hit him. Now, I would have forgotten him completely, except that just an hour later, while crossing the Pulaski Skyway over the Jersey Flats, I saw him again. At least he looked like the same person. He was standing now with one thumb pointing west. I couldn't figure out how he'd got there, but I thought maybe one of those fast trucks had picked him up, beat me to the Skyway, and let him off. I didn't stop for him. Then, late that night, I saw him again. It was on the new Pennsylvania Turnpike between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh. It's 265 miles long with a very high speed limit. I was just slowing down for one of the tunnels when I saw him standing under an arc light by the side of the road. I could see him quite distinctly. The bag, the cap, even the spots of fresh rain spattered over his shoulders. He hailed me this time.
Hello!
I stepped on the gas like a shot. That's lonely country through the Alleghenies, and I had no intention of stopping. Besides, the coincidences, or whatever it was, gave me the willies. I stopped at the next gas station.
Yes, sir. Fill her up, will you? Check your oil?
No, thanks.
Nice night, isn't it?
Yes. It hasn't been raining here lately, has it?
Not a drop of rain all week.
Oh, no, I suppose that hasn't done your business any harm.
Well, people drive through here all kinds of weather. Mostly business, though. Ain't many pleasure cars out in the turnpike this season of the year.
I guess not. What about hitchhikers?
Hitchhikers here?
Why, what's the matter? Don't you ever see any?
A guy would be a fool who started out to hitchhike on this road. Look at it.
Then you never see anybody?
Nope. Maybe they get a lift before the turnpike starts. I mean, you know, just before the toll house. But then it's a mighty long ride. Most cars wouldn't pick up a guy for that long a ride. This is pretty lonesome country here, mountains and woods.
Yeah.
Hey, you ain't seen nobody like that, have you?
Oh, no. It's just a technical question.
Oh, I see. Well, that'll be $1.49 with the tax.
The thing gradually passed from my mind as coincidence. I had a good night's sleep in Pittsburgh. I didn't think about the man all next day until just outside of Zanesville, Ohio, I saw him again. It was a bright, sunshiny afternoon. The peaceful Ohio fields, brown with the autumn stubble, lay dreaming in the golden light. I was driving slowly, drinking it in, when the road suddenly ended in a detour. In front of the barrier, he was standing. Let me explain about his appearance before I go on. I repeat, there was nothing sinister about him. He was as drab as a mud fence, nor was his attitude menacing. He merely stood there, waiting, almost drooping a little.
the cheap overnight bag in his hand. He looked as though he'd been waiting there for hours. And he hailed me. He started to walk forward.
Hello!
I'd stopped the car, of course, for the detour. For a few minutes, I couldn't seem to find the new road. I realized he must be thinking that I'd stopped for him.
Hello!
No, I'm... Not just now, I'm sorry.
Going to California?
No, not today. The other way. I'm going to New York. Sorry. After I got the car back onto the road again, I felt like a fool. Yet the thought of picking him up, of having him sit beside me, was somehow unbearable. Yet at the same time, I felt more than ever unspeakably alone. Hour after hour went by. The fields, the towns ticked off one by one. The lights changed. I knew now that I was going to see him again. And though I dreaded the sight, I caught myself searching the side of the road, waiting for him to appear.
Yep. What is it? What you want?
You sell sandwiches and pop here, don't you?
Yep, we do. In the daytime. But it closes up for the night.
I know, but I was wondering if you could possibly may have a cup of coffee. Black coffee.
Not at this time of night, mister. My wife's a cook and she's in bed.
Well, now, listen. Just a minute ago, there was a man standing here, right beside here, and he was a suspicious-looking man.
Henry? Who is it, Henry?
It's nobody, Mother. Just a fella thinks he wants a cup of coffee. Now, go back into bed.
I don't mean to disturb you, but you see, I was driving along when I just happened to look, and there he was.
What was he doing?
Nothing.
You've been hitting a bottle. That's what's the matter with you. You got nothing better to do than wake decent folk out of their hard-earned sleep. Now get going. Go on.
But he looked as though he was going to rob you.
I ain't got nothing in this stand to lose. Now on your way before I call out sheriff folks.
I got into the car again and drove on slowly. I was beginning to hate the car. If I could have found a place to stop to rest a little, but I was in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri now. Few resort places there were closed. I had seen him at that roadside stand. I knew I'd see him again. Maybe at the next turn of the road. I knew that when I saw him next, I'd run him down. But I didn't see him again until late the next afternoon. I'd stopped the car at a sleepy little junction just across the border into Oklahoma, let a train pass by when he appeared across the tracks. He was leaning against a telephone pole. It was a perfectly airless, dry day. The red clay of Oklahoma was baking under the southwestern sun. Yet there were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. I couldn't stand that. Without thinking, blindly, I started the car across the tracks. He didn't even look up at me. He was staring at the ground. I stepped on the gas hard, veering the wheel sharply toward him. I could hear the train in the distance now, but I didn't care. Then, something went wrong with the car. It stalled right on the tracks. The train was coming closer. I could hear its bell. Or its cry, its whistle crying. Still, he stood there. And now I knew that he was beckoning. Beckoning me to my death.
Frustrated him that time. The starter had worked at last, I managed to back up, but after the train had passed, he was gone. I was all alone in the hot, dry afternoon. After that, I knew I had to do something. I didn't know who this man was or what he wanted of me. I only knew that from now on, I mustn't let myself be alone on the road for 1 minute.
Hello there. Hello. Like a ride?
What do you think? How far you going?
Amarillo. I'll text you to Amarillo.
Amarillo, Texas?
Yeah, I'll drive you there.
Gee.
Hop in.
Mind if I take off my shoes? My dog's killing me.
No, go right ahead.
Oh, gee, what a break this is. Swell car and decent guy driving all the way to Amarillo. All I've been getting so far is trucks.
You hitchhike much?
Sure. Only it's tough sometimes in these great open spaces to get the break.
Yeah, I think it would be, but I'll bet, though, if you got a good pickup and a fast car, you could get to places faster than, well, say, another person in another car.
I don't get you.
Well, you take me, for instance. Suppose I'm driving across the country at a nice, steady clip of about 45 miles an hour. Couldn't a girl like you just standing beside the road, waiting for lifts, beat me to town after town, provided she got picked up every time in a car that was doing 65 or 70 miles an hour?
I don't know. Maybe she could, maybe she couldn't. What difference does it make?
Oh, no difference. It's just a crazy idea I had sitting here in the car.
Oh, imagine spending your time in a swell car thinking of things like that.
What would you do instead?
What would I do if I was a good-looking fellow like yourself? I'd just enjoy myself. Every minute of the time, I'd sit back and relax. If I saw a good-looking girl along the side of the road... Hey!
Did you see him, too?
See who?
That man standing beside the barbed wire fence.
I didn't see anybody.
Right there.
There was nothing, just a barbed wire fence. What did you think he was doing, trying to run into that barbed wire fence?
There was a man there, I tell you. A thin, gray man with an overnight bag in his hand. I was trying to run him down.
Run him down? You mean kill him?
I'm trying to get rid of him. Or at least prove that he's real. But you say you didn't see him back there. You sure?
I didn't see a soul. As far as that's
concerned... Well, watch for him. Watch him the next time. And keep watching. Keep your eyes peeled on the road. He'll turn up again. Maybe any minute now. There! Look there!
How's this door work? I'm getting out of here.
Did you see him that time? Did you see him?
No, I didn't see him that time. And personally, mister, I don't expect never to see him. All I want to do is go on living. And I don't see how I will very long driving with you.
No, look, I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me. Please, don't go.
So if you'll excuse
please,
me,
please, you
mister.
Can't go. Listen, how'd you like to go to California? I'll drive you all the way to California.
Pink elephants all the way? No, thanks.
Listen, please, just 1 minute.
You know what I think you need, big boy? Not a girlfriend, just a good dose of sleep. There, I cut it now.
No. No, you can't go.
Leave your hands off of me, do you hear? Leave your hands.
Come back here, please. Come back. She ran from me as if I was some kind of monster. A few minutes later, I saw a passing truck pick her up. I knew then that I was utterly alone. I was in the heart of the great Texas prairies. There wasn't a car on the road after the truck went by. Trying to figure out what to do, how to get a hold of myself. If I could find a place to rest, or even if I could sleep right here in the car. Just a few hours and sleep. Just along the side of the road. I was getting my winter overcoat out of the back seat to use as a blanket. Just as a blanket. When I saw him coming toward me. Coming toward me. Emerging from the herd of moving steer.
I didn't wait for him to come any closer. Maybe I should have spoken to him then. Fought it out then and there for... Now he began to be everywhere. Whenever I stopped, even for a minute, for gas, for oil, for a drink of pop, a cup of coffee, a sandwich, he was there. I saw him standing outside the auto camp in Amarillo that night when I dared to slow down. He was standing near the drinking fountain, a little camping spot just inside the border of New Mexico. He was waiting for me outside the Navajo reservation where I stopped to check my tires. I saw him in Albuquerque where I bought 10 gallons of gas. I was afraid now. Afraid to stop. I began to drive faster and faster. I was in lunar landscape now. The great arid mesa country of New Mexico. I drove through it with the indifference of a fly crawling over the face of the moon. And now he didn't even wait for me to stop. Unless I drove at 85 miles an hour over those endless roads. He waited for me at every other mile. I see his figure. Shadowless. Flitting before me. Still in its same attitude. Over the cold and lifeless ground. Flitting over dried up rivers. Over broken stones cast up by old glacial upheavals. Flitting in the pure and cloudless air.
When I finally reached Gallup, New Mexico, this morning. There's an auto camp here. It's cold. Almost deserted this time of year. I went inside and asked if there was a telephone. I had the feeling that if I could speak to somebody familiar, somebody that I loved, I could pull myself together.
Number, please.
Long distance.
Thank you. This is long distance.
I'd like to put in a call to my home to Brooklyn, New York. I'm Ronald Adams. The number is Beechwood 9970.
Thank you. Thank you. What is your number?
My number is it's 312.
Albuquerque. New York for Gallup. New York. Gallup, New Mexico, calling Beechwood 9970.
I'd read somewhere that love could banish demons. It was in the middle of the morning. I knew Mother'd be home. I pictured her tall, white-haired in her crisp house dress going about her tasks. It would be enough, I thought, just to hear the even calmness of her voice.
Will you please deposit $3.85 for the first 3 minutes? When you have deposited $1.50, will you wait until I have collected the money? All right. Deposit another $1.50. Will you please deposit the remaining 85 cents? Ready with Brooklyn. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Mrs. Adams' residence.
Hello. Hello, Mother?
This is Mrs. Adams' residence. Who is it you wish to speak to,
what?
Please?
Who is this?
This is Mrs. Whitney.
Mrs. Whitney? I don't know any Mrs. Whitney. Is this Beechwood 9970?
Yes.
Where's my mother? Where's Mrs. Adams?
Mrs. Adams is not at home. She's still in the hospital.
The hospital?
Yes. Who is this calling, please? Is it a member of the family?
What's she in the hospital for?
She's been prostrated for 5 days. A nervous breakdown.
Nervous.
Who is this calling?
Nervous breakdown. My mother has never...
It's all taken place since the death of her oldest son, Ronald.
Since the death of her oldest son, Ronald? Hey, what is this? What number is this?
This is Beechwood 9970. It's all been very sudden. He was killed just 6 days ago in an automobile accident on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Sir, your 3 minutes are up. Your 3 minutes are up, sir.
And so, I'm sitting here in this deserted auto camp in Gallup, New Mexico. And so I'm trying to think. I'm trying to get a hold of myself. Otherwise, I'll go crazy. Outside, it is night. The vast, soulless night of New Mexico. A million stars are in the sky. Ahead of me stretch 1,000 miles of empty mesa and mountains, prairies, desert. Somewhere among them, he is waiting for me. Somewhere I shall know who he is and who I am.
Orson Welles will be back in just a few seconds to tell you about next week's production of the Mercury Summer Theater. But first, the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon wish to remind you that though you may not be able to get Pabst Blue Ribbon every time you want it in these days of grain restrictions, it is well worth your while to keep asking. For every bottle you do get will continue to live up to its name. And speaking of grain restrictions, not a single grain of wheat is being used in the brewing of beer and ale. And the grains that are being used by breweries are not the grains wanted for famine relief. Now, let me repeat. When you do get Pabst Blue Ribbon, you can be sure this truly great beer will be, as always, the happy blending of never less than 33 fine brews. As always, blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon. Now, here is Orson Welles.
Well, next week, ladies and gentlemen, we bring to your radio another Mercury favorite. We hope a favorite of yours. You've asked for it many times. We've performed it many times. Jane Eyre. And Jane will be played by a Mercury actress who was heard tonight and has been heard so often on our shows. One of the most gifted people we know in our business, Miss Alice Frost. Jane Eyre, then, with Alice Frost and your obedient servant. That's the same time next week, same station. Please join us. Until then, speaking for my sponsors, the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, for all of us on the Mercury Theater, including Bernard Herrmann, who wrote and conducted the music on this program, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
More than one half of all our nation's workers make their living in the food industry or a related field. One of the largest groups in the food industry are the grocers. Next week in Chicago, the National Association of Retail Grocers, which represents more than 500,000 retailers, is holding its first post-war convention, at which problems of food distribution will be discussed and new ideas and methods will be worked out to better serve its customers. The makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer salute the grocer who is doing his very best under trying conditions to keep America well fed. This program came to you through the courtesy of the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, makers of blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have another treat from the master of drama, Orson Welles. In 1951, he did a show for the BBC that was syndicated in the United States a year or so later, called The Black Museum. It's set in Scotland Yard's Museum of Mayhem, and as Welles wanders its aisles, he focuses on one object or another and tells the story behind it. Enjoy a mystery of murder from The Black Museum, The Spotted Bedsheet, first broadcast in 1951 by the BBC.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. Black Museum. Here, in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. A warehouse where everyday objects, a tallow candle, for example, a mounted cat, an andiron, all are touched by murder. A bedsheet. It's a familiar object. You see them every night, except on rare occasions when you're roughing it. Linen is the usual material. Sometimes they're made of silk. This one is linen. It bears the imprint of the steamship Bengal Tower.
May I make up your bed, Miss Parsons?
I certainly, stewardess. We're on our way, aren't we?
Yes, miss. That's the last we'll see of Cape Town. I'll just change your sheets, miss.
Thank you.
Fresh ones for the first night out.
Today, that bedsheet can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Here we are, the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's very special, very particular museum of murder. If you're a student of criminology, a student with some imagination, I don't think you'll be alone here in the Black Museum. Each small card meant solely to identify crime and criminal will bring to life for you a sinister ghost. You walk here, attended simultaneously by killer and killed. And there's a long-necked chemist's flask. It was meant to hold life-giving medicine, but somebody intervened. There was acid in this flask. A few pellets dropped in, dissolved. The flask was smoky with lethal vapor. The sleeping man died. Here's a bicycle, made for fun, but notice the wheels, the crumpled spokes, crushed tires. A girl rode this bike downhill, and a wire was stretched across the roadway. Ah, here we are, the sheet. A common, everyday bed sheet, stamped in one corner, SS Bengal Tower. That's a luxury liner on the route between Cape Town and Southampton. It's a nice ship, and a voyage to enjoy, particularly when you're young and homeward bound. Natalie Parsons was young and homeward bound, and very lovely. The first night out, there were two gentlemen friends to dance attendance.
Thank you, Miss Parsons. Now you make even the lieutenant's life a pleasure.
Why, lieutenant, I thought the Navy was the life for a young man with adventure in his soul.
Well, that's just the legend, but all legends come to an end. Just like the dancing tonight.
Mr. Morrow, holding the fort at our table all alone. Let's be nice to him, lieutenant. Hmm? I hear he knows the captain of our ship.
The dancing was over in the main salon. The orchestra retired for the night. High above the brilliantly illuminated decks on the dim, binnacle-lighted bridge, Captain Booth had his own thoughts as he paced away his watch.
It'll be all right. Full passenger list, decent crew, engines in good shape, ship all squared away, topside and below. You never know. That's the worry and the fascination of it. You never know.
No, Captain. You never know, do you? You never know. Ah, but such thoughts are ridiculous. Look at the three people at that table near the bar in the first-class lounge this minute. The Parsons girl. Actress, the passenger list says. The naval lieutenant. What was his name? Jeff Hennessy, that's it. And Noel Morrow. Past middle age, but quite distinguished. Heavy stockholder in the line which owns your Bengal Tower. Nice people having a fine time.
And this, gentleman, concludes our performance for this evening.
Oh, but it's early yet, Miss Parsons. Yes.
Well, I'm not used to the sea air, Lieutenant. I'm tired, so I'm going to bed. And thank you both for a lovely first night at sea.
May I see you to your cabin?
Hold on, I claim that privilege. You dance with her all evening, son. Now it's my turn.
Oh, don't fight, gentlemen. Well, not the first night out, anyway. I think we'll exceed Tanner's wish tonight, Jeff. He has some basis to his claim, you know.
There you are, young fellow.
Well, I surrender. There's plenty of time, Southampton, and lots of moonlight.
Yes, plenty of time for fun and enjoyment and even playing at love. As the great ship knifes through the tropic seas northward, homeward bound. So Noel Morrow walks Natalie Parsons to her cabin and returns to the bar for a nightcap with Lieutenant Jeff Hennessy.
To Natalie, a nice girl.
I'll drink to that. A fine talent, I hear.
Yes, I saw in a play in Johannesburg, Three-Cornered Moon. Huh? Very amusing.
That's so. Well, I never heard of it. Still, I'm glad I heard of Natalie Parsons. Nice girl.
Good-looking, too.
Yes, all of that and more. Well, here's to a pleasant voyage.
Two gentlemen converse over whiskey and soda, then repair to their respective quarters and fall asleep. 2 a.m. Four bells. On the bridge, the watch is changing.
First officer reporting we're leaving, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Forsyth. We're making 15 knots, course 348. All quite below.
Thank you, sir. I took the liberty of checking before I came topside. The watchmen are ringing their station, sir. Stewards and stewardesses turn in, sir.
Very well, mister. Take over. Carry on.
North-northeast, roughly, is the course. The ship moves on. The captain goes to his cabin. First officer Forsyth and the quartermaster stand to on the bridge. All quiet. Below on B deck, the watchman makes his rounds.
That's a funny one. B-24 ringing for steward and stewardess both. We'll have a look.
What is it, man?
Is something wrong, sir?
Nothing's wrong, why?
Both your buzzers are ringing, sir. For your steward and stewardess both.
There must be a mistake. Everything here is fine.
The watchman is puzzled. He goes back. The buzzers have stopped. He checks the cabin list. B-24. Miss Natalie Parsons. He hesitates back to the cabin or up to the bridge. Was it a mistake? He chose the bridge.
What is it, Peter?
B-24, the ladies' cabin. A single occupied, Mr. Forsyth.
Is it now?
Buzzers was ringing. I answered. A man came to the door. All I did see of him was his trouser leg and shoe. Black, both of them.
Well, strange things can happen on shipboard on a cruise like this, you know. You just go on with your rounds and fill out your report when you go off watch.
Yes, sir. Very well, sir.
In a few moments, I'll go below and check. Want to make sure, meet me at B-24 at 5 bells.
Aye, sir. Thank you, sir.
Strange things do happen on shipboard.
even without tropic seas and a voyage home, quite strange things. Five bells. 2:30. First officer Forsythe, with watchman Petrie at his elbow, knocked discreetly on the door to B-24.
Unlocked, is it? I'm careless.
So it seems, sir.
Swing a torch in here, Petrie.
Aye, sir.
Nobody here. Cabin's empty. All right, Petrie. Make a report. I'll enter this on the log. We'll let it go at that. Girls will be girls, Petrie. Trust you haven't forgotten that.
Discreet fellow, that first officer, but then he'd had plenty of cruise experience. He noted the matter in the log. After all, he had left the bridge for a few moments. And that was all. Now, it happens that one of the duties of the first officer is to call the roll at boat drill. You know how that goes. The bells clang all over the ship. The passengers joke as they reach for life belts, dusty with disuse, and scramble to the boat deck at the stations noted on their cabin doors. And after a bit, the first officer comes around and checks the roll.
Yes, I know. I quite agree here. Answer to your names, please, ladies and gentlemen. This is a boat station for cabins B-18 to B-45. All passengers and crew assigned here will answer. Mr. Ainsville?
Here.
Alan Birch?
Here, sir.
Miss Lawrence?
Here.
Mr. Leary?
Present.
Nancy Meadows?
Yes, sir.
Major Morton?
Here.
Miss Parsons? Miss Parsons? Miss Parsons!
The first officer reported to Captain Booth. Captain Booth thought it might be courteous if Miss Parsons were under the weather to pay her a courtesy call. Captain knocked.
Empty.
Strange.
Stewardess? Stewardess!
Yes, sir? You wanted me, Captain?
I do. You see Miss Parsons this morning?
No, sir, I haven't. It's a little queer, rather.
How so?
Well, she wasn't at boat drill either, sir. Her night things are missing.
You laid them out last night, did you?
Yes, sir. Pretty things, too. Just right for her. But not a sign of them this morning, and stains all over the sheet.
How's that? Where?
Here, sir. Sort of red and a few black ones, sir. Streaks like.
I see. Just a moment. There are times when I'm glad first-class cabins have telephones. This is the captain speaking. I want Dr. Stout in B-24 at once. Thank you.
You don't think something's happened, do you, sir? She's such a nice girl.
That's what everyone says. Funny goings on in here last night. Watchman's report. A log. Notice anything else peculiar here this morning, stewardess?
Well, yes, sir. When the first I came in to straighten up, first off, I noticed the porthole, sir. Swinging open it was, all by itself. I fastened it before anything, sir.
Yes, that's right.
You call for me, Captain?
Yes, Doctor. Take a look at the stains on that sheet, will you?
Right.
All right, stewardess, you can go, but stay on call.
Yes, sir, I'll be right outside.
And send in the watchman.
Yes, sir.
Well, Doctor?
These are probably lipstick. The other red spots, they look like blood, I'm afraid. I'll tell better after I've run a test. The black marks beat me.
Not a very pleasant prospect. Blood on the sheet and an open porthole.
Watchman Petrie, Captain.
Ah, yes, don't go, Doctor. Now, see here, Petrie. This man you reported speaking to last night, did you see his face?
Sorry, sir, I didn't. Only his trouser and one shoe, like I told Mr. Forsythe.
I see. It's too bad. What about his voice?
It was muffled, sir, by the door. But he did have, a kind of accent, sir.
What kind? American? Welsh? Scots? Irish?
If anything, it was Scotch, sir.
All right. Dismissed.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Doctor?
I don't like the looks of it. I'd seal this cabin and notify owners if I were you.
I'll do that and more. This is the captain. Hey, give me the bridge. Watch, officer, please. Hello? Mr. Matson? Captain Booth here. I want a complete search of the ship at once for a passenger. Natalie Parsons. Crow's nest, a block hole. And put the ship about, mister. We're going back on a sea search as well. Calculate our position at 4 bells this morning. I'll be topside directly. We're not going to find her alive, you know, Doctor. But we'd better have a look.
I know.
If this girl went through that porthole alive, the sharks have got her by now. If she went through dead, we have a murderer aboard. As I said before, not a very pleasant prospect, Doctor.
The Algin looks so pleasant.
An empty cabin. An open porthole. And blood on the sheet. And I'd remind you that that sheet today can be seen in the Black Museum.
Will you gentlemen have anything to add? Have you, gentlemen?
Neither of them did. But in Southampton, the Criminal Investigation Department did have a few items to add.
All right, Hobson, what's the report on this Parsons girl?
Well, exactly what she said she was, Inspector. Actress.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently quite well accepted in Joburg. Plenty of men at the stage door, so to speak. Uh-huh. Age 25. Never a touch of scandal. 2 points.
Yeah.
She was in the Army Intelligence during the war. Had languages. Good actress. Quite a help.
Oh, possibly in Secret Service nowadays.
No, I called the special branch on that. Positively no. She's back in civil life completely.
Oh, well, that's a possible theory down the drain.
Yes, sir.
Well, you had 2 points, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. The other is, she said she left Joburg for a theatre job here. Well, there's no sign of it, sir. No manager in England has signed her, though some of them knew the name.
Oh, we'll keep after that. Oh, how about the passenger and crew list? Anyone familiar?
No, not a criminal record in the lot. And we've checked all 368 of them.
All right, Sergeant. Well, keep after that theatre job angle. Meanwhile, alert the technicians and the harbour police. We'll be going aboard that ship before the pilot takes her over.
A ship with a sealed cabin drew nearer to home. Somehow the festive quality of a voyage home was missing. Tension settled over the Bengal Tower from the bridge to the boiler room. At long, long last, the anchor dropped into Southampton water. The passengers gathered to watch for the pilot boat.
That's no pilot boat, is it, Halsey?
Police launch.
I expected as much.
Funny. Dance with a girl, you know her for 8-10 hours out of your life. She stays with you.
It happens, son. She was a lovely thing. Don't fall in love with a ghost. You wind up rather lonely, you know.
Thanks. I remember that. Quite a few of them coming aboard.
Yes, we're in for a going over, apparently.
The captain spoke to the passengers and crew of the public address system.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, representatives of the Southampton police have come aboard to proceed with the necessary inquiry into the tragic disappearance of one of our fellow passengers. Until this inquiry has run its course, it'll be necessary to lie off and not to proceed ashore. Your cooperation will be greatly appreciated. And I'm sure you realize that all which can be done is being done to place you ashore as soon as possible. Thank you.
I wish them luck. How I wish them luck.
On B-deck, Inspector Rice took over from a greatly relieved Captain Booth. No time was wasted.
Set up a lab in the ship's pharmacy and get at those stains. Compare them with the girl's lipstick and get the blood type. And find out what's in those black markings.
Yes, sir.
Now strip the bed and go through her things top to bottom. Now, I want to talk to the watchman, the stewardess. And from what you say, Captain, the man in here that night had a Scots accent.
That's correct.
Well, how many Scotsmen aboard? Have you checked that?
We have. 26, Inspector. 18 passengers, 8 in the crew.
Oh, very good, sir. You have been thorough. Now you, I take it, are the watchmen.
They work quickly, but they work thoroughly. The watchman and the stewardesses reasserted their statements to the captain with one addition.
Oh, yes, sir. I cleaned the cabin thoroughly. Wiped everything.
That was too bad. No chance now for fingerprints. In the improvised laboratory in the ship's pharmacy, they did better.
Well, the lipstick stains match the lipstick in her luggage exactly, sir.
The blood type on that spotted sheet?
Type O, sir. The girl's army record gives the same type.
Meanwhile, information arrived from ashore.
She had a job waiting for her, Inspector, at the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, sir.
And then the police chemist came up with a long-awaited answer.
The black streaks on the sheet, sir. Lamp black wax and petroleum oil. That's shoe polish. But there's a trace of silver polish mixed in, sir.
Ah, now we've got something, Hobson.
Yes, sir, but what?
Well, who'd get silver polish on his boots aboard ship, Sergeant?
Well, it's a weird combination, sir.
A ship steward, Hobson. A steward with a Scots accent. Now, let's see the captain, shall we?
I'll cooperate in any way I can, Inspector.
that even if it is one of my men, there's not a thing to tie any of them to the incident.
Well, sir, I have an idea. We can let the passengers ashore now, but hold the crew. Then you invite the police detail and the ship's officers to luncheon. Set up four tables well apart, waited on by the four stewards you say are Scots-born. At the end of the meal... Thank you, steward. I will have some more coffee. Now, as I was saying, gentlemen, it's practically over. That one fingerprint on the glass of the porthole will hang the man. No question about it. They always forget something, make at least one silly mistake. There'll be a ship's mechanic from our harbor police aboard.
All right, young fella. You can stop polishing that porthole cover now.
What's the meaning of this? I'm doing my job.
There's no fingerprint on the glass. You fell for the inspector's plan. I'll have to take you in charge. Willful murder on suspicion. And I must warn you, anything you say may be taken down in writing.
They smoked him out all right, but he refused to give in without a struggle. It was interesting to watch his mind work as they questioned him.
You're Alan Birch.
I am.
Your first trip aboard the Bengal Tower?
Round trip. Went out in her. This is the return.
Like the ladies, do you?
They seem to like me.
Ever had any trouble with one before?
No, never. What do you mean, before?
Your forearms, Birch, and your neck, all scratched.
No dame ever scratched me.
Well, where did you get them, then?
Ship's cat. I tried to pet her. She let me have it.
It won't wash, Birch. No cat's claws ever scratch like that. Ship's doctor will certify to that. And those scratches aren't old enough to have happened ashore.
All right, then. It was a woman.
Huh?
A stewardess.
Which one?
I'm not saying. She'd lose her job.
Nonsense. Who are you protecting, Birch?
Nobody.
Stop it, Birch. You're only making it harder for yourself. You were on duty for that cabin, among others. She rang. From the watchman's story, the buzzer was stuck. But you didn't realize it until he knocked on the door and spoke to you. You went to B-24, forced your way in, attacked the girl, and when she resisted, you killed her and pushed her through that porthole. Wasn't that the way it was, Birch?
I'll never attack nobody.
We say you did. There's blood on the sheet. Her blood. We'll find it on your clothes, too.
I never attacked her. We had a date. After she ditched the two jokers she was dancing and drinking with.
Be careful what you say, Birch. It's all being taken down and may be used in evidence.
I'm telling the truth. I didn't kill her. I was waiting in the cabin, like she said. When she came in, she changed her mind or something. She tried to push me out. I don't take that from no woman. I grabbed her. She fell against me. She was foaming at the mouth in a sort of fit. She collapsed. I put her on the bed, tried to give her artificial respiration. That's how the black got on the sheet, maybe.
Probably. Go on, Bert.
When that fool Petrie came to the door, I lost my head. She looked dead. I didn't know what. I locked the door. I couldn't find no heartbeat. Nothing. I figured Petrie would report to the bridge. I picked her up and pushed her out of the porthole.
Why did you decide to tell this tale, Birch?
Because you'd pin it on me anyway. I know coppers. So better than have you cook it up, you got it my way. I didn't kill nobody here. I didn't kill nobody.
Stanley Birch had told his story. Not a very good story. For there in contradiction was the testimony and evidence, including that blood-stained bedsheet, which you can see today in the Black Museum. Stuart Birch was a ladies' man. There was no doubt about that after the evidence was in. The jury had little doubt either. They convicted Mr. Birch of first-degree murder, despite his protestations, and despite the fact that for the first time in 200 years, a jury had been given a homicide case without a corpus delicti. This was a major aspect of the case, a very interesting one, I think. And further, just after the conviction, the House of Commons suspended the death penalty in England. As for Stuart Birch, you'll find him spending the rest of his natural life in Dartmoor Prison. And as for the spotted bedsheet, it remains in its customary place. In Scotland Yard, in the Black Museum. And now, until we meet next time, The same place I told your brother's story about the Black Museum. I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Thank you so much for listening to the Old Time Radio Hour. Each week, we bring you the best of old time radio from our vast collection. I hope you can join us again next week for some classic horror as we wrap up our Halloween tribute. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.